What's up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe. Of course, it is me, Jonathan, and as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie.
Hello all, welcome back.
So yeah, this is a bit of a special episode. Didn't know if we would actually get around to doing it. It's been a lot of film watching. We are doing an Oscars special. It will be split into two parts. This is part one, and on this episode, we will be covering Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Adapted Screenplay. So yeah, me and Kenzie have been busy, busy boys. We have watched a lot of films in a short space of time to try and get an episode out where we can try and predict who's going to win. And it'll be interesting how we play this. We might pick our favourite out of them, or we might be strategic and be like, oh, actually, I think this will win, even though it is not my favourite in the category. So yeah, let's kick things off. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with original or adapted screenplay?
Let's start with adapted.
So adapted screenplay. Currently, the nominees are All Quiet on the Western Front, Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, Living, Top Gun Maverick, and Women Talking. So just want to preface off the bat, currently on recording, we have not been able to find Living anywhere to watch. I don't think it's even in the cinemas local to us either. So that'll be a bit of a weird one. If it ends up winning, great. I mean, it looks like a good film from trailers and stuff, but we won't be able to give you an insight in that, sadly.
Yeah. Shame.
It's a shame. The thing about this Oscars is when I started watching some of these films, and I initially was going to do it just off my own back and maybe do a podcast or just do a written sort of thing about them, and then I spoke to Kenzie and was like, do you know what, do you fancy doing it for the podcast? You were down to it. I was like, there's a lot of these films that cross multiple categories this year. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, like 10 films, like the best 10 films, apparently, according to the Academy, are in pretty much every category.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, eh?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. So, yeah, I mean, All Quiet, Glass Onion, Top Gun Maverick, Women Talking, we've watched all four of those films. I enjoyed three out of four of those. I'm just going to be honest, Women Talking is a rough watch.
It is.
Like a real rough watch.
It's quite interesting though at the same time. It's not a bad film.
It's definitely not a bad film.
I actually quite like it, to be honest. It's a bit rough, but some films have a rough subject matter in it, but I think that one's fair.
My problem is the fact that it's real.
Real, yeah. I know, eh?
And it only happened like 15 years ago or something.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, like 2000, late 2000s. It just shows you these mad kind of religious or weird kind of communities exist, and, you know, and they're kind of outside the law, which is probably shouldn't be, and it's not really safe, as we see here. The film was directed by Sarah Polley, and it's based on a novel by Miriam Toews. The author of the book grew up in a Mennonite community in Canada. Oh. So obviously she had like a background, and I think that's probably why the book was successful and became an adapted film. The subject matter is pretty grim, particularly because there's kids involved, like as young as 3-4 year old. I think, yep. Like, I'd watched the film and sort of went in and went, oh, what's this about? And then sort of was looking on the internet. It's like the case spanned women from the ages of 3 to 65. I mean, that was the age range. And I was shocking, man. It's a rough watch. It's a pretty simple film in terms of how it's women talking in a barn. It's essentially what
literally
it is.
And
then there was some interesting kind of offshoot stories where there's some cutaways and stuff. It just goes to show you what can be made. Like, simple film, get good actors in one location and then film some interesting cutaways and you can make a really good. It's a good looking film. I just it was really bleak, and the problem is that a lot of these films are quite bleak.
True. That's very true. Like just looking at the films having to watch them, like a lot of them, I was like, oh, I'm not too sure. Like, I was trying to like space them out in a way to watch them so that like I'd go from like a couple downy kind of films to, like a film that was just like maybe like just up or like was just like a completely different kind of tone and was just more just upbeat or just I mean like action. I mean fucking we've had a Top Gun and stuff like that there as well. So
yeah, move on to Top Gun. I was a bit hesitant about this one before I watched it.
I'm not a big fan of the original. I'm not huge on it. I think it's a very 80s film, and I don't know. I'm not. I like a lot of 80s films, but like that very like very that feels very 80s, and sometimes I can like that. Sometimes a lot of things I'm not bothered about it. So I was like, I'm not really caring for a Top Gun sequel, but then everyone was telling me, oh, it's so good. It's better than the original. Oh, it's so good, and I'm like, I'm going to have to watch it now. So I did. We were watching it for this anyway, but it just happened that my dad put it on, and I was like, oh, I need to watch this anyway. So we all watched it. How do you feel about it?
I had a lot of fun with this film. Like a lot of fun.
Do you like it? It's a good. I mean, it's not a bad. It is a good film. I don't know. Maybe I just don't like plane fighting. Maybe that's what it is. But it's shot like, very well.
I can get why people might not like the film, but for me, like this is quintessential blockbuster film that works on every level. Huge set pieces. Like you spend about a good 60-70% of this film in the air in fighter jets, and that is great. I mean, Tom Cruise is great. Miles Teller's great. They've got like a past because obviously he's Goosey's son. And if you're familiar with the original Top Gun, I don't think you really need to watch the original Top Gun to watch this, which I think is great as well. This is just one of those you'll be able to work out the pieces in this film. I think the problem is because I'd been watching a lot of down films, as soon as I put this on and from the get-go, I was like, oh, this is great, Elite. This is just what I need right now. And I think that's what happened at the cinema and at the movies is people were just needing a film like this. And that's why it made so much fucking money.
I think that's true, yeah. I think I'm kind of in the minority for not enjoying it as much. I don't know. I honestly don't. I'm like I can see that it is quite a good film. It's not like I didn't enjoy it. I did enjoy it. I don't know. There's something about the action in this film. I mean, it's the plane, especially near the end of the film, it is quite good. But to me, I don't know. I think it's hard to make, and they film it really well. They do film it really well. They do, like. The shots of like inside like the cockpit they all look great, but I actually just think the action itself is not for me doesn't really tickle my pickle. A weird way of putting it. I don't know. It just I don't know. There was one really cool scene like kind of in one of the action parts, and that's when that plane does that mad move. That was cool. But
yeah, like it's great. Tom Cruise obviously knows how to fly a plane. And he does and he's like the best pilot in the game. That's why he's never went up the ranks. He just wants to be in the air. Yep. Which is essentially what happens at the end of this film is he isn't able to teach anybody else to do this ridiculous flight that they've got to do. They kind of say, well, you have to go in. And I think he was happy sacrificing himself if he had to because it seemed like an impossible thing to do, and things go wrong like they always do in these films, but they end up getting out of it, which is good. I thought that Tom Cruise was going to die,
so I didn't think
god, like, didn't he do this is horrific, and I was like, but maybe it's the right thing. And then when Miles Teller comes back and saves him, and then they have that I think this works in so many levels for me. There's like so many good beats in it. Like I like it. I do. I really enjoy it.
Actually, I'm very happy that they didn't kill off Tom Cruise.
So am I.
I think the way they done it was great because Tom Cruise, could have died. I was like, but that's so like kind of tell. Do you see that in so many films?
Yeah.
But you've seen no film do what this film done, where it's like, he's dead, and then he's like, but he's not, and then the other person comes back to save him, almost gets killed as well, and it's like there's sort of an extra part to the film that wasn't there before. It's like a little epilogue, or not epilogue,
yeah,
like a little thing.
I mean, I like it. Good. It's a good end, and then obviously they end up in a really old plane that Tom Cruise can fly, and they run out of bullets, but then basically the dick of the group comes back to save the day. But they're a team. They're all a team at the end of the day. Anyway, I enjoyed it. I mean, I know that you're a bit lukewarm on it, but I really like Top Gun.
It's not. It is good. Most people like this film. Most people really enjoy this film. I'm just not super into Top Gun.
Movie,
to start with. I would say it's better than the original. I would say that. But
I've got a phrase for this film. Movie for the masses. 100%. Yeah. Like, 85-90% of everybody who watches this will have a great time.
Yeah. And that's the truth, and it's made tons of money. That's
made
obvious.
Loads of money. Right, on to Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery. This is a follow-up to the 2019 movie Knives Out, which I absolutely loved. Loved, 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 loved. This one kind of caught me off guard a wee bit. Netflix has spent a fuck ton of money to acquire Knives Out.
Yeah, I'm shocked that they did.
I think it's somewhere around like 400, 500 million, like somewhere in that ballpark.
It's crazy,
Ridiculous.
So what is like best, best adapted, right? So that means it was adapted from like something else.
Yeah, pretty much it's not an original story.
So Glass Onion, where was that? Was that just taken from like an Agatha Christie or what?
No, and that is based on Knives Out, like characters created by Knives Out. See, this is the thing, right? So
the thing is
because Benoit Blanc's already exists in another film, it's not an original.
It's not original.
Technically, it is an original. This is where a lot of podcasts that I listen to that do the same shit that we do, just they get paid for it. Maybe we will eventually listen to the podcast, everybody, and then we can give you more episodes and more content. But anyway, they were arguing that this shouldn't be adapted because it's the same director, same writer, using characters that he created, but because of that, it's an adapted screenplay instead of an original. Even though that the only character that remains is Benoit Blanc, everybody else is new. It's a new story, and it's not about the same people. And I think that's the way the Knives Out stuff's going to go, where it's all going to be kind of isolated in its own film. I don't think there's ever going to be anything interlinking, apart from the fact that Benoit Blanc's probably going to be the investigator. So, I think this is going to be an issue going forward. And that's why it's adapted and not original. Obviously, Top Gun's the same.
It's
based on original characters in the original Top Gun film. Women Talking's obviously based on a novel. Mm-hmm. All Quiet on the Western Front was another film, and it was also a novel as well.
Yeah.
So, whereas everything on the original side, which we'll cover in a couple minutes, is all original stories. But anyway, Glass Onion, I'm a bit lukewarm in that. You really like this, I think.
I do quite like it. I think it's close to the original film.
I think there's at least a star, maybe a star and a half of a difference.
See, the thing is I like Knives Out, but I don't like it as... I quite like Knives Out, but I don't like it as much as everyone else likes it. People love Knives Out, and I'm like, it's a good, really good film. I'm just not quite there as where a lot of other people were. Because I remember like our friend at the time, Lewis, was talking about how it was his favourite film of the year and stuff like that. And I'm not quite fully there, but I did really enjoy it. I think it's a very enjoyable film with a good conclusion. This film, at the start, almost lost me. It feels quite different. That's what kind of threw me off. Is it the humor in this film? Kind of different. The way everyone's acting at the start of the film, the way it was working was a bit. The first like kind of 10 minutes was genuinely losing me until kind of Benoit Blanc comes in and he comes in playing Among Us, although it was funny, I still think it was a bit silly. And I was like, okay, am I going to like this? But it actually gets into the film. It starts working, and it has a good conclusion. Not as good conclusion. I think nowhere near as a good conclusion as Knives Out had, to be honest. But I think it's still a good conclusion. It's a bit weird compared to the first one. It's I don't know. I do quite like it though. The humor, some of the humor in this film, I don't like. That's the one thing. Some of the humor I find a bit cringe, especially that woman who gets stuck on her middle fingers up, and I can't remember what she keeps on saying, but it's just cringe. I hate cringy shit in films, man. And that to me was a bit. That wasn't too much, but it was a bit cringy for me.
See, the reason that this film doesn't work for me anywhere near as much as the original Knives Out is I just don't like any of the characters or the acting in it, you know. You've got decent actors. Nowhere near as good a cast, in my opinion, as the first movie, like, apart from Edward Norton. But even he, his character's just not very good.
Disappointed that he was the guy in the end as well. Yeah. I thought that was really obvious.
The problem is with these films is he sets it all out. He shows you everything.
Yeah.
You could find out the answer as soon as it gets to the halfway point and then Benoit Blanc steps in and starts going backwards. If you'd seen everything that he points out at that point, you would have already known what was happening. So I guess for really clever people and people that analyse films when they watch them, they might know everything that goes on in this and might go, this is a pretty shit film. But I think for most people, they miss a lot of the sleight of hand and stuff that happens in these films.
It's one of the issues I had with the original film was that Chris Evans' character was the killer, kind of, because I thought that was really obvious too. But the reason why I don't mind it too much with that film, the kind of obvious kind of it was him, was because the climax of the film is really good and they do it in a really good way and it works. Like, it works really well. Whereas this film, I guess, kind of does the same thing, but I don't know. I think it pays off a lot better in the first film.
Yeah.
But it's still a really enjoyable film. I watched it with, like the first time I watched it with, like, my parents and that. They think it's just as good, and my brother as well, they think it's just as good as Knives Out, and that's what I've kind of heard round about. I think Knives Out is better. I'll agree with you on that.
Right. Anyway, let's not digress. This isn't just a Knives Out podcast. We're talking about all of the films and all these categories. Last one, adapted screenplay, is All Quiet on the Western Front. Now, we are recording this after its massive success at the BAFTAs.
Yep, it sweeped.
I wasn't able to watch the BAFTAs, but Kenzie was messaging me, telling me what was going on.
Yeah.
I think this film will do okay at the Oscars. I just don't think it will win the awards that it won at the BAFTAs, you know. Like,
I agree. I think it's BAFTAs. The BAFTAs is almost like the Wild West sometimes. Different stuff can happen at the BAFTAs. British leeway, I mean, like, I think Banshee's got a lot in the BAFTAs, which I think they'll probably get less.
It sounded by the, like, when you were telling me who was winning early, I was like, is Banshee's just going to win a lot? And then all of a sudden it kind of turned and All Quiet won Best Picture and Best Director and stuff. And I was like, I wasn't expecting that. I thought maybe Martin McDonagh would have maybe won, or Banshee's would have won Best Picture.
I think Banshee's got four awards, because it was two supporting actors, Best British Film.
All right, okay.
And there was something about, like, screenplay, I think.
Original
well.
Screenplay.
So, yeah, so it was four.
Well, yeah, All Quiet. I enjoyed watching it. It's really dazzling to look at. It's a beautifully made film.
One of the best looking war films I've seen.
But I'm probably not the best on war films. They don't always hit for me. And this one, because I watched on Netflix, I watched it dubbed as well, and that kind of threw me off because it's dubbed really badly.
Oh, you watched it dubbed?
It's dubbed really badly as well.
Yeah, you can't, dubs just don't work, man.
Yeah, well, some dubs do work. This didn't, because I think in German, I'm guessing it would have been a German language or French, but I'm guessing German. A lot of the phrases are shorter than what you would say in English, so they're still talking and they've stopped talking on screen. and that kind of fucks with you a bit. Well, I didn't actually pick to listen, watch it dubbed. I just pressed play on Netflix.
Automatically.
Just automatically dubbed it, so I didn't even think about it. Well, I mean, it didn't even dawn on me, like, oh, by the way, this might be a foreign language movie. But I got, like, 25, 30 minutes in, and I was like, I'm just going to continue.
There's no point in changing it there.
Right? Yeah, I would agree that if you're going to watch this and haven't already, definitely do. It's on Netflix currently, but don't watch the dubbed version. Unless you really don't want to read subtitles.
Yeah. I feel like I'm probably going to have to give this film a watch again.
Yeah, it's quite long, and it can be a bit draggy at parts.
A lot of dialogue, some of it's quite quickly spoken at times, and I feel like there was a few parts where I feel like I kind of miss a few things in dialogue anyway. So I would like to revisit this one again. I'm not the biggest on war films. I did like it. It is a good film. I don't know. I'm weird. There's not many war films I feel like really strongly about. You know what I mean? Like, there's only a couple. Like, Hacksaw Ridge is one. I mean, Saving Private Ryan. Like, there's a couple. And, of course, Full Metal Jacket. But for the most part, I'm not that huge on this film. But I can tell you for a fact that it is a good film. It's quite a... I mean, it's the German side of kind of World War One. It's
really bleak as well. It's like, you know, and these women talking's kind of bleakness. Obviously, the subject matter is vastly different, but it's just really bleak, really dark, really kind of muddy, and not super bloody, but you do get to see kind of trench warfare, and you do get to understand what it was like. And I mean, it's these young boys that are, 17, that are essentially being pushed into the front line, and
it's quite
weird, because you get to a part where they're in the trench, and then all of a sudden it's like they're living in a village somewhere.
That was weird,
and
wasn't it?
Then they go back to war. It's kind of weird.
I got confused at that part as well. But I think one of the most harrowing things from the film for me was, like, because it kind of starts you off with all the boys, like, get really excited, we're going to war, and then, like, not even, like, it probably was even, like, 20 minutes later, most of them are dead. And it's just, like, the glasses, this Becky guy dies, anyway, spoilers.
Oh, he gets blown up.
It's really quick, suddenly, it's a really quick turn for them being, like, excited to going, oh, this is fucking awful, which is what would happen, because it's a horrible thing,
of
war, especially that war.
And then you've got the people that have been there for months or years or whatever, have just went, you know, get on with it, you know, we've got a job to do. And I think it does show that side of it. I think there was, like, a ruthless part of the film, see when they're getting their uniform,
and
the guy goes back and he goes, oh, this isn't mine. He just rips the name tag off, man,
just drops on the floor.
But obviously the guy's died or whatever, I don't know. Anyway, that is all five in this category. Like we said, we haven't spoke about Living. I don't think Living will win. I think one of the four films that we spoke about will win. And I think that if All Quiet is to win a few awards, this will have to be one of them.
It will definitely win this one.
You think so?
100%. Compared to what it's against, I don't see anything else winning in this category.
So do you think we both agree in this one then?
Yeah, I think it's an easy dub. So
you're saying All Quiet?
All Quiet, 100%.
I'm going to say All Quiet as well.
Yeah. I mean, compared to, like, the other films, like, there's good films in there. I don't think any of the other films stand a chance.
Oh, there you go. All Quiet for Best Adapted Screenplay. That is our prediction there. So, move over.
Maybe We've Been Talking should be considered, but I don't know. I feel like
possibly.
All Quiet should.
All Quiet. Anyway, move over to Best Original Screenplay. We have The Banshees of Inisherin by Martin McDonagh. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once by the two Daniels. The Fablemans by Steven Spielberg and Tony Kushner. Tar by Todd Field. And Triangle of Sadness by Ruben Östlund. Which, I'm not going to lie, was the wild card out of all these films for me.
Oh, yeah, that was the wild card.
And I fucking love it.
Really?
I think that film has got a chance to win a lot of awards.
I knew nothing about the film. I literally knew nothing.
It won the Palme d'Or at Cannes.
What's that?
They won the Palme d'Or at Cannes last year.
Oh, I think we'll talk about this one first, because it's kind of the most interesting one before we get into the other few.
Yeah.
I I had already watched quite a lot of the films by the time I went to this one, and I didn't really know what it was. I actually thought this film was maybe quite serious and a kind of drama. And from the first, like, 15 minutes, that's kind of what I got. Slightly comedic kind of drama. Then they get to the yacht, and it's still quite got that comedic tone to it, but maybe it's like, I'm like, where's this going? I'm like, we're like, what, 40 minutes or 40 or so minutes in? And then things start just going mental. Like, the Woody Harrelson shows up, and it's like, oh, he's the captain. Oh, that was interesting. I love Woody Harrelson, so I'm not going to say anything about that. And the film starts going a bit crazy. It's like everyone starts puking, and the waves are going mental. It's going crazy. Woody Harrelson is the best part about this film, though. I'm sorry, that part is fun. I'm not a big fan of this film, but I'll tell you one thing, the whole part with Woody Harrelson and the other guy was my favourite part of this film, when they're talking about Marxism and shit like that.
Dimitri.
Yeah, I really like that one part of the film. But it's crazy, and I'm like, when's this going to stop and go back to normal? And it doesn't. It gets more crazy, more crazy, more crazy, until it literally goes insane.
I mean, and did you not like this? I thought you would have liked this film.
I was at first I wasn't too sure, and then when the part with Woody Harrelson was happening, I was getting kind of into it. See, once they hit the island, I pretty much lost it. The whole island part, the rest of the film after that, I just don't think it's very good at all.
I think this is a very clever film in terms of, I mean, it's a satirical comedy about money and classes and the class system and how it flips when they're on the island, how it reverts to the opposite, to the people.
It takes so long to get there, though.
It's just the way the film's set up. Set in three parts, you've got Carol and Yaya, then you've got the yacht, then you've got the island. And then the end of the film, I think it lands, you know, you get that kind of morality kind of question, and it's kind of up to you to decipher what you believe happened.
I didn't like the ending at all.
I quite like open endings like that.
I like open endings, but I think that was a not very good open ending. It was weird. It's kind of trying to be serious parts of the film just don't hit for me because the film got so wacky. And that last part, I just wasn't really knowing where the film was going, and it kind of hit us with that part there, and then suddenly it's him running over, and it's like credits, and I actually raised my eyebrows at the time. I was like, wait, what, that's it? Yeah, this one didn't do it for me, to be honest, for the most part. Like I said, my favourite part was probably the part where Woody Harrelson came into, and then he's gone. They clearly didn't have enough money to keep him in the film after the boat crash.
Well, I suppose, I'm just comparing this to all the other films that we've watched.
It's unique.
Like a short space of time. I really like
it. It's the director's first English-speaking film, and for that, I will say that he's done a good job, but
he's just had back-to-back Palme d'Or winners at Cannes as well. It's weird. He must be a really good filmmaker, that's the thing. Like, do you know what? I really, really enjoyed this film, and Kenzie didn't, so this is it. We're split here, so if you want...
I'm surprised you like it so much. Honestly, I'm surprised you like this one.
If you want something a bit different, a bit wacky, that has, in my reading of the film, it's got some really cool flip and meaning behind it, whereas Kenzie doesn't like it. It's not really meant to be taking itself too serious.
It's not a satirical comedy.
But there is serious undertones if you kind of read it that way. But anyway, as a wild card, this is what we'll just call it, a wild card. And I think that it has the potential to win a few awards. It might not, but it's one of those films that, because it's so different, it could just maybe pique the interest. Anyway, we will move on to Tar, the Cate Blanchett-led film about the fake conductor Lydia Tar.
How did you feel about it?
I don't dislike this film, but I don't love it as much as every other film critic. Well, I'm not a film critic. Every other sort of thing that I've read about it seems to really put it in high regard. I've not really checked audience score and stuff like that, but critically this is a really massively acclaimed film. I like it. I don't love it.
I originally started watching, fell asleep 20 minutes in, And I was like, oh, I'm not going to like this at all. And I was, it piqued my interest, but I wasn't that interested. But after watching it, it feels really, one thing I say, it does feel really long, but you know, I kind of like that sometimes, mm-hmm. and it worked for me in this film. I really like this film. I actually really like it a lot.
See, when you told me that you fell asleep, I was like, you probably not got far enough into the film that it starts to kind of become a film that you didn't think it was going to become.
It's a bit, there's a lot of really weird things. I watched a couple of videos about it afterwards, and I actually think the film's really interesting.
It is.
There's like so many things about it, like what the topics that it's talking about. People will keep them going on about like it's kind of about, because I don't think this film was advertised correctly. I think that's one thing. When you see the kind of poster for this, you think it's like a kind of film about like a struggling conductor or like a conductor kind of. And you also expect it to be a real person. It's like, but no, it's not. And the reason why it's not is it's obvious. It's why they've chosen. It's because it's what it's about, and it's about kind of like cancel culture and stuff like that. And I think it's a really interesting film with really kind of weird parts in it at times, especially at certain points. There's actually, believe it or not, I don't know if you noticed. I only noticed one of them, but there's two. There's two moments where you can see a ghost.
I mean, I didn't even know that, but yeah.
And I think it was supposed to be the ghost of Krista. There was one that I completely missed when she wakes up from her bed and she walks out and she's sitting in the corner of the room. Never saw that one. But there's another one earlier in the film where I was like, I'm sure someone's in that. She goes into her, like an apartment thing, not her like actual house, the apartment thing she's going into. And she's in like the kind of hallway and like there's the piano in the other room. If you look into that room, you can kind of see half a face just like the side peeking through. And I was like, is there someone there? And she goes in, no one's there. And I'm like, wait, what? It wasn't until I rewatched the film that's what that was.
This is weird because, yeah, maybe it is marketed different. It's because there is a lot of kind of, I wouldn't call, they are kind of horror elements because it is psychological at points.
It's psychological,
But it's still a drama. It's like it's a psychological drama, but it's good. I like it.
It's a bit arty, but it's not super arty.
Look, I enjoyed it. I
did. It's good.
I think it's worth a watch, definitely. And I mean, Kate Blanchett, we'll go on to speak about her performance in the part two of these podcasts. But we'll save that one. Anyway, move on to The Fablemans, Steven Spielberg, Tony Kushner. This is just a competent, really well made film. That's semi autobiographical.
I'm hit or miss with Spielberg a lot of times. There's some Spielberg films that I really like. The Terminal, I think it's a great film. Stuff like that. There's some Spielberg films that are obviously fantastic films, and there's other ones I'm just like, I'm not bored. But this was probably the film I was least excited to watch, and I left it to last pretty much, and watched it, and I actually really like it. I actually really like this film. I don't know, I was shocked. I actually think it's great. I really enjoyed it. It worked for me, and I don't know why. I actually don't know why it did. I think it's a pretty good film.
I think it's a mid film. I'd call it mid.
Do you know what? I think that's fair. For me, it's maybe slightly, I quite enjoy it, but it's probably about slightly above average. But I like the acting's good. I don't know, I just enjoyed it.
I'm not taking away from the acting and stuff. I just think, like, there's no groundbreaking stuff with Steven Spielberg anymore. You know what you're getting, and it's quite boring sometimes to just watch a movie maker that's not... He's so good that just push the boundaries, Steven. Come on. Like, where's Jaws? Give me Jaws, but, like, in a different form. That's what I want.
He's hit that point. I don't think he can do that anymore at this point. He's like... I honestly, I was expecting a kind of mid-ish film. I'm just surprised I actually did quite like it. It is probably a bit above average, though. I think that's really what the film kind of feels like. It's not pulling any. It's not trying to do anything super special. I think Jonathan is right. It's made well and it's done well. That's it. It's not superbly done. It's not a superb film, but I did actually quite enjoy it. And I thought I wasn't gonna like it at all. So.
I think my biggest problem is like, I like it when creative people or artistic people take a big swing. And it doesn't have to hit all the time, but at least you try to hit a home run. Like, it's like the whole Damien Chazelle Babylon. Haven't watched it. It's not featured in any of these categories, so we won't. I like Damien Chazelle films. Like, Whiplash is probably one of my top 10 films of the last 10 years. Like, it's an incredible film. And at this point in his career, he's took a massive swing, because he can, and it seems as though he's not done it that well. But he took a big swing. I'm all for that. Like, that's why I'm a Christopher Nolan fan. Takes massive swings. Predominantly, that's what he's known for. Like, some films are a bit safer, but yeah, it's just what I look for, and that's maybe why I'm not a massive Spielberg fan. Like I said, like, obviously Jaws and Close Encounters and early Spielberg's incredible, but he was young and pushing the boundaries. Now he's maybe settled into his late career, and he just wants to be a competent filmmaker, and that's fine. And there's nothing wrong with this. If you're looking for sort of a melodrama that's kind of quite fun and has great acting in it, this is for you. You will really love this film. But if you want something that's a bit out there and a bit different, you maybe want to look at Tar or Triangle of Sadness or what's coming up next, Everything Everywhere All at Once. You maybe want to go in that direction, because that is a completely unique film.
True.
So Everything Everywhere All at Once, I didn't really know much about it, and then it kind of everybody was talking about it, and yep, it was on Prime, and I had to watch it. And like I've just prefaced, I'm a huge Christopher Nolan fan, and this film even fried my brain. This film is fucking batshit crazy.
It's insane. I knew the film existed. I knew the title. But this is actually weird. It's one of the nominations that actually came out near the start of the year instead of near the end. But I heard a couple of people say, "Oh, this one's pretty good." And I was like, "Oh, right." But I didn't really know what it was. I thought it was like some sort of kind of superhero thing. I heard it was made quite well on like a budget where they had to like kind of improvise with certain things and stuff like that. So eventually, one of my friends who's, I don't know, never mind, he recommended I should watch it.
One of those friends, aye. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
He recommended that I should watch it, so I did, and I think it's brilliant. It's really weird, it's wacky, it's super goofy, completely unique. Pretty much most things in the film does not make any sense, but that's kind of the point. It's not really meant to make any sense. It kind of acknowledges that it doesn't, like how the whole multiverse thing works in the film. They explain how it works, but it doesn't. There's no logic to it, if you know what I mean. The film's really silly at times. I thought it was going to lose me because it was being that silly. The butt plug scene is what I'm really talking about. But it really hits at the ending. It really hits really hard, and I think it's a brilliant. I gave it 5 stars, and I think that's fair.
Yeah, I'm not. It's not a 5-star for me, but I mean, like, it's a big swing, and like I said, the two Daniels have taken a big swing, and I appreciate what they've done. I do enjoy it. I think there's a couple of great performances in it, which we'll get on to on part two, when we sort of do the acting categories. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. I had a lot of fun with it, and it doesn't take itself too serious, which, I suppose if you pair this with Triangle of Sadness and a back-to-back watch, you wouldn't be a million miles away. I think they're both... whereas one does have more serious notes, but I think they both kind of work in a similar fashion. It's one's like a really weird parallel universe movie. One's just a satirical kind of offbeat comedy, and I think they're both weird and wonderful in their own ways. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this, and if you haven't checked it out yet, it's available on Prime. Do so. A really, really real bag of fun. You might get a fried brain at the end of it, but yeah, it's definitely worth a watch. And then last but not least in this category, we have The Banshees of Inisherin by Mr. Martin McDonagh.
This is a good category.
This is like, a great category, yeah. It's going to be a tough one. I wouldn't know. Like, we're going to have to pick a film here, and it's going to be hard.
It's going to be hard, because 4 out of the 5 films three I extremely really like. And
I like 4 out. I like all of these films. I like four of them better than one of them. Like,
yeah, I agree. I think I like 4 of them, but I still think that Fablemans doesn't make it to the other 3. But I do still like it.
Yeah, Martin McDonagh, back again. He, another black comedy. That's just what he's known for at this stage.
And he's just great at it.
That's the thing.
Yeah, I love dark comedies. If there was a film, if I got to make a film, I would probably make a dark. I'm fascinated by that the tone of a dark comedy.
Problem is,
he's the best at it.
They're just hard to write, though, to land. That's the problem. Yeah.
And he's so good at it.
When does it not become too comedy, and when does it not become a full-blown drama? That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's a really, really fine line to straddle, and he's great at it. I mean, it's what he's known for. Available on Disney Plus, if you haven't checked it out, please do. This is a five-star movie for me. I love this film.
It's close for me. I think I was kind of 4.5, but it's really good. I wouldn't disagree with Jonathan giving it a 5. That's very good.
And
is it his best film?
Maybe for me. Maybe for
it's
me.
Definitely up there. It's definitely.
I think all his films
definitely
are good, though. That's the thing.
So. Yeah, that's what I there's not a single one of his films I don't like.
It's like try and play some. It's kind of strange. Very simple film, though. This is the thing. When I was watching this, I was like, right, I might not be able to hit the tone the way he does, but I feel like I could write a film like this. I've got a couple of good actors, a village in rural Ireland, have great scenery, and just go, and that's it, and work, and it pays off, and it's amazing. This film obviously isn't as good unless the cast's great, and obviously he's managed to strike it lucky there with all the cast, specifically all the main cast members in this film are great, and if they weren't, it might not be as good, but my God, I really enjoyed this film. It's quite bleak at times as well. I don't know if I necessarily want to see somebody chop off all their fingers, but... yeah, it is good and really fun, and it's not, you can laugh at this film as well, which I like, as much as it is kind of a drama at times, it is funny as well.
It's such a good film. It's like such a, like, how do you take like such a simple kind of idea and just make it not boring and make it like,
no idea.
Time wise it's an easy watch. You don't feel it drag.
It's like less than 2 hours though.
Yeah, it's less than two. It's a good time, and it's all the actors in it are so good. I'm so glad that Kerry Condon has actually got a chance to show off that she's actually quite a good actor. She's been in a Better Call Saul for, well, that's now finished, but she plays a character in that. It's not a big character in that, but she is in it, and I'm really happy to see her actually get to fully show what she can do. And she won the BAFTA, and I'm kind of really happy about that. Barry Keoghan as well was brilliant. Everyone's so good. I mean, I know Colin Farrell's a good actor, and I know Brendan Gleeson's a good actor, and I've seen these kind of performances from them before, even in the this director's other films.
Martin McDonagh films.
Martin McDonagh. I should say his name. He's a very good he's a very good director, man. But they're both good. Watching back a couple of scenes, I now kind of understand why Colin Farrell has been nominated as for Best Actor, because there's some scenes where I'm like, that is actually quite fucking good acting. It was just one scene where it's when Brendan Gleeson says, "Oh, I don't like you anymore," and it's all the facial emotions he makes in that thing before he says anything, and I think that's good acting right there. Like, I don't, that's hard. I feel like that would be hard to do, because you have to kind of be in the head of the character to kind of pull that off. Very good.
I think that's an Irish story by, I don't know if Martin McDonagh's Irish, but he's definitely British.
He's Irish.
Is he Irish? Or he's, sure, Irish, he's Irish, with that surname, I suppose. Maybe we shouldn't say that.
He won best, but he won it for Best British Film, but I think he's Irish.
And then I don't think you could have a film without the Irish cast, and I think when you feel it and it's so familiar with you, because this is a lived-in film, it's so relatable. There's so many different relationships that don't work or change that people might have to deal with, you know, best friends that fall out or whatever, and him and his sister, she leaves, and you've got that part of the film, and there's so many different parts where, although it's set within this film, people might have been able to relate to it, and I think that's why it works. Anyway, let's pick a winner.
Oh boy.
I know where I am. My favourite film out of all these is The Banshees of Inisherin, so I'm tipping it to win.
I'm in between that and Everything Everywhere All at Once, probably, but I do really like Tar a lot. I actually do quite like Tar, but maybe the other two are better. I don't.
Pick one, come on.
For original, I would probably give it to Everything Everywhere All at Once.
There you go. So we agreed on adapted screenplay, All Quiet on the Western Front. We're split here. I am Banshees of Inisherin. Kenzie is Everything Everywhere All at Once. We will now swiftly move on to Best Director. And it's safe to say that we have just waxed lyrical about all of these films because they're exactly the same films that were nominated for original screenplay.
Oh.
We have Martin McDonagh for The Banshees of Inisherin, Daniel Kwan and Daniel, is it Shiner, for Everything Everywhere All at Once, Steven Spielberg for The Fabelmans, Todd Field for Tar, and Ruben Östlund for Triangle of Sadness. Exactly the same movies. We have just spoke about them, so we don't really need to go into much more depth other than if you really want to talk about technical aspects of the film. I think there's a couple of these films where practical, technical aspects maybe for me outweigh some of the fucked up shit and Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's why I like Banshees. That's why I like Tar. They don't fuck around with CG and green screen, and they get a great location. They get great actors. They press record on the camera. They shout action and they go. And that's what I love about true movie making. Whereas things like Triangle of Sadness has probably got some CG and shit in it, I would assume.
I would guess.
Everywhere All at Once definitely does.
Definitely does. But I feel like what they did, like from I've seen some of like the kind of behind the scenes stuff, how they done certain shots is quite impressive how they did it. The shot in the part when what's her name? Michelle Yeoh?
Yeah.
Oh? Michelle Yeoh. It's the first time she uses the thing and she gets like pulled into the cupboard.
Yeah.
That shot was I kind of saw how they'd done that shot, and they had like two screens on the side. It wasn't like green screens. Do you know how the Mandalorian now uses like those like mad screens? It was kind of like that. It's like a way, way cheaper version. Really, really like pixely and kind of cubey, but that's what they use for like the side of his effects and stuff like that. And it's just really cool. I think they've done a really good job on directing the film. The absolute crazy men.
Fair.
Yeah.
No, I think this is a strong category as well, because I think as much as they're all really great original screenplays, they're also all really well-made films. There's some bits of Triangle of Sadness, which I really liked, you know, when the ship was moving around and the sort of uneasiness of the camera, it could sort of tilt and stuff like that as well.
Some of the shots were good.
Yeah, like, it's fluid, it's not fixed, and that's what I really quite like, and it sort of reminded me of Inception when they're going upside down and like they're fighting in the lobby and like, yeah, I think these people obviously will see other films that, and not steal, but they'll be like, oh, that's quite cool, can we try and work it in? And it's not an action film in the same, but this one's going to be tough for me. I mean, Steven Spielberg, I don't really know why he's in this category. If he's just making a film like you expect him to make, should he be nominated?
What kind of bothers me, I don't think Fableman should have been nominated at all. Like, it's a good film, but compared to like some of the other...
Why is the All Quiet guy not nominated here?
That's a good point. Why was he not?
Edward Berger.
They should have took out Spielberg and put him in. Like, they just keep him... Spielberg makes the film and it's like, oh, it's gotta get... It's like, no, it doesn't.
All Quiet, this probably... Edward Berger should probably be in here. But I can understand why he's not, because this is Academy Awards, Oscars, not the BAFTAs. But the technical feat of that film to me, it looks better than The Fablemans. And I'm not saying The Fablemans looks crap, because it doesn't. It's a really well-made film. But there's something about All Quiet that just kind of elevates it a bit in terms of the technical stuff behind the scenes and how the director is making a movie. But then the same could go for The Fablemans, and it might be the art of Steven Spielberg being able to make a film like this, but not you not think it's that difficult when it actually is. I think we're going to have different answers for this.
Maybe.
Where are you going?
Well, I feel like I'm between Banshees and Everything Everywhere All at Once Again. Honestly.
Yeah.
For director. Well, what about you? Would you not?
No.
Were you? Are you kind of?
I am Tar. I think Todd Field might win this one.
Do you know what? I think you might be right. As of, I think he did do a good job. Do you know what? You're actually kind of convincing me. Yeah, do you know what?
Don't let me sway you. You pick who you want to pick.
I would be happy if he won. I can't stress enough that I really did like
Tar. See, this is the thing. I picked the wrong movie. Like, I didn't think you would like Tar, and I thought you would like Triangle of Sadness, but it's flipped, obviously. That was me kind of not... I didn't know if Tar would be your thing, but I really enjoyed Tar as well. I really enjoyed Triangle of Sadness, but there's something about Tar that I think Todd Field...
could win. Yeah,
might just take this one.
I honestly think... I think it's probably... going to be Martin or the Daniels, to be honest. But I would like it if Tar won.
Well, it's a prediction. It's not like
so
who you
I would
want.
Probably
it's
say
who do you think is going to win?
I feel like it'd be less risky to say the Banshees.
So Martin McDonagh.
So I'm gonna say that.
I want him to win. I just don't think he will.
I feel like the Daniels could maybe win it, but I feel like that's more of a risk.
Right, okay.
I said that. I feel like it's most probably going to be him.
We are split again. I've got Todd Field for Tar. You have Martin McDonagh for the Banshees of Inisherin. Now we're on to the biggie, Best Picture. 10 films nominated. They are All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of the Water, or The Way of Water, not The Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fablemans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, Women Talking. We have spoke about 8
most of them
of these films already because they're well lauded and nominated in other categories. The other 2 films that we need to pick up are Elvis, the Baz Luhrmann movie, and Avatar, The Way of Water. Big Jim Cameron is back on Pandora once again with his blue people. am I not allowed to say that?
I can't see who that would be offensive to.
Exactly, just blue people. I don't know many blue people.
The Navi are going to speak out.
Yeah, Navi are coming for me. Big Jake's coming for me. Big Jake Sully. Anyway, what one do you want to kind of touch on first before we pick?
Let's go with Elvis first.
Elvis. Baz Luhrmann's Elvis. This was maybe one of the first ones after I started to watch some of them and decided why not do an Oscars. So I think this is the first one I watched. I am really unsure about this film. I think it's so grandiose and over the top, and I don't really know how much of it's real. Don't know if it's like a proper biopic where it's like everything's real. It's kind of more in the vein of like Bohemian Rhapsody for me.
I think that's a fair comparison. However, I really like Bohemian Rhapsody. I think I just like it because it's Queen. I think that's one of the films.
Oh, Bohemian Rhapsody's better than this.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I probably do enjoy it better. I think Bohemian Rhapsody is weird because I actually kind of feel like I really like Bohemian Rhapsody a lot. Mm-hmm. And I went to the cinema to watch it. My dad's.
I also went to the cinema to see Bohemian Rhapsody.
My dad's like the biggest Queen fan ever. He absolutely loves the film, and I really liked it too. But there's something about Bohemian Rhapsody. I don't know. I shouldn't be talking about Bohemian Rhapsody now. This present day Oscars, but there's something about it, it's not actually that as good as we all perceive it.
Probably not, no.
Queen, but I don't know. I like it, and Rami Malek, I love Rami Malek, so.
So, this is in the Best Picture. This film will pop back up in part two, probably in a discussion for the Oscar that is most likely to win. I don't necessarily want to bring up. No, it is not costume. It is Best Actor, obviously. The elephant in the room, Austin Butler, as Elvis Presley.
He's good.
Look, we're not here to talk about Best Actor, but we will have a heated discussion about his performance. This is Best Picture. This is kind of like overall. His performance is good. In fact, it's great. I really like it. I've got a theory about the Best Actor award, and we'll touch on that when we do the acting categories in the next part. Elvis, I don't really like Tom Hanks in this film. I feel like Tom Hanks led. He's like the narrator of an Elvis fucking biopic. It's not about big Colonel Sanders, whatever his name is, Tom Parker.
Yeah, what the fuck is that?
He's just a big sleazeball. I don't know. I really didn't enjoy his performance in it.
All right, I'm only going a little rant about this film. It's going to be small. It's going to be fairly brief. I think I've got to the reason that I actually do quite like Baz Luhrmann films. Romeo plus Juliet, I really like.
Why
I
is it really plus like... Juliet? Why can't you just say Romeo and Juliet?
It's because it's Romeo plus. It's called Romeo plus Juliet. I probably should call Romeo and Juliet. It's just so I know everyone knows what exact film I'm talking about.
Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet is what it's titled on a DVD case, I'm pretty sure.
All right. And I really like The Great Gatsby, even though a lot of people don't like it. I actually do quite like it. I know, it's controversial.
You want some Moulin Rouge in there, bud. That's what you want.
Is that Baz Luhrmann as well?
I like Moulin Rouge, yeah. That's Baz Luhrmann.
I should probably watch it, because I know my gran loves it. But I was going to Elvis, and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this. The first 10-20 minutes was fucking an acid trip. What is with that? Like, I was watching it, and I was watching it with my friend Stuart, and we were both going like, what the fuck is going on? This is fucking weird. I'm not liking this at all. But once it settles down a bit, it does get quite good. It's very slow. It does feel quite slow. And then, of course, a lot of these kind of biopic films kind of end suddenly. This one kind of does that. Well, Barry does this kind of too. They can't really help it. It also mixes in some present-day music in at certain scenes. There was a certain scene where it really didn't fit near the start. Didn't like it. Tom Hanks, I liked him in it, but I'm going to talk about the prosthetics. The fat prosthetics of his face look fucking terrible. It looks really bad, and he looks super goofy in a couple scenes. There was this one scene. I swear he got he's for some reason like sitting at like a roulette table or something, and he turns his head around, and then it's like kind of transitions. Me and Stuart burst out fucking laughing. He looked so fucking goofy, and we couldn't stop fucking laughing at him. It was so funny to us. I don't know. They really, in the day and age now, your fat prosthetics should be getting pretty good. I've literally just watched The Whale. Looks great, like that the prosthetic they used in that looks very real.
Like, let's not touch upon The Whale. It will come up on part two.
It will come on, but like, I just think for a film at that stature, he should have looked way better. He looked inflated with like air. He didn't actually look like he was fatter. I think it wasn't a very good effect. But I think I'm all right with his performance. I like the film. But it's kind of fucking wacky at times. Baz Luhrmann, isn't it?
I mean, I'm not a huge fan. I know people did like this film. But yeah, it's not really for me. As much as I do, I do quite like Austin Butler in the role. Just wanted to touch upon Baz Luhrmann. So Baz Luhrmann's first film came out in 1992, just over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
How many films has he made?
Well, like six?
Elvis was his sixth film.
What a guess, by the way. Holy fuck.
You've got Wikipedia up, it's fine.
I actually don't.
That's mad, man. Like, how he's only made six movies in 30 years. Fucking hell.
He's
just one of those movie makers. He's writer, director, producer of literally everything he does.
He looks weird as well.
Fuck's sake, okay. Let's not comment. Let's not comment.
I can I just apologise straight to Baz Luhrmann for saying that. That was really mean. I didn't mean anything bad by it. I'm sorry.
Mate, you look, like, you look like an alien. It doesn't matter. You've seen the size of your head.
I don't think my head's that big.
A big chrome.
Big chrome. Chromian. Chromian.
Anyway, right, we'll move on to Avatar The Way of the Water before we pick our guest for or our prediction for Best Picture and then wrap the podcast up. So Avatar The Way of the Water, Way of the Water. I think you stopped saying The Way of the Water. The Way
I
of
keep on
water.
Saying The Way of Walter.
The Way of Walter White. That would have been a Avatar The Way of Walter White and Heisenberg just comes back. And that would,
a Navi.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. Jim, if you're listening, there you go. That's what you're
There's
next.
Avatar 5, 6 and 7 for you.
This film is utter trash, man.
I've got one word for it. It's shit. I said two words. I was trying to defend it. See, I watched this one with Stuart as well. I was trying to kind of defend it. I was like, he was like, oh, this is fucking dreadful. There's like no story and it's kind of, it's just, we're underwater for like ages. Would be really, by the way, it's no joke. For like an hour and a half, you're underwater looking at dumb fucking fish that look really stupid. I'm not joking. It's literally like half the film. And I was trying to defend it. I was like, it's just kind of Avatar 1. It's not that bad. But then as it kept on going, I was like, you're right. It's pretty bad. It's like, do you know what it is? It's a tech reveal. It's like when the new the video game consoles come out. And they're like, oh, to show off the new consoles, what they can do, we'll make this game that looks great, but it's actually a shit game. And that's what this is. It's like, yeah, look what we can do, but the film's not very good.
That's the story. Like, the story's like so one beat narrative. It's
there's
like
nothing there.
It's like,
there's
oh, right.
There.
So he's now a full Navi. He's got a family, right? But the Sky people are coming back for him, right? So the baddies are the same people from the first film. But you know what we'll do is we'll start capturing the children because then that'll make the audience go, oh, not the children, which is fair, but that's so reductive filmmaking that it's just the same beats, you know, and it happens multiple times. The kids get caught multiple times. Nothing major happens until the last 40 minutes of a 3-hour, 5-minute movie.
It's true.
It's absolutely mental. A lot,
we actually had to put it on 2x speed. It was that dreadful for us.
The problem with this film is it starts out, oh, they've had a family and they're living, and then all of a sudden the Sky people are back and they're like, they're living in the forest because of forest Navi, and it's like, oh, we need to run away, so they run to the Metcaina tribe in the islands in the ocean, and then they're like, oh, we really, whatever the word is, but they're looking for sanctuary, I'm guessing, is whatever the term is. And they finally agree. And then then there's like an hour or so of them learning the way of the Metcaina. And then you've kind of got the cutaway to the side story of the baddies trying to track them down.
You hardly ever see them.
And you hardly ever see them. And then it eventually culminates where they basically hurt a toucan, like a big whale, and they're like, all the Metcaina go, oh, we really should fight here, and Jake's like, that's what they want, listen to me, just tell the toucan to go away, but then Loak, the youngest son, or the middle son, I think it's the youngest son, I think there's two sons and two daughters, he's going to tell his toucan friend, I can't remember, was it Payakan, whatever his name is, the toucan that he's bonded with, the one, the outcast one.
Yeah, I know what you're,
so he goes to, he goes, whale. He basically goes to warn him, but they've hooked him, so the kids are in danger again, and they manage to get him free, and then that's where it culminates in the big sort of showdown. That toucan kicks ass though. I'm not gonna lie. Like, he's a beast. He just saves the day, destroys everything.
I've just got one to say that this film literally becomes like Free Willy, or like Moby Dick for a bit. It literally does. It's fucking just Moby Dick. I'm not joking. It's just underwater. He's talking to a whale and he's like, "Oh, you're a good outcast whale, Sigma whale."
Anyway, he's also Sigma whale. Fuck's sake. Also, it's kind of got beats of Aliens, which. I'm guessing it's like Avatar meets Aliens. It's pretty naff. I don't really like it. Some of the effects on it are no very good. I feel like it's like it's like a blown up video game. Like,
yeah, it's like a video game cutscene that you want to skip and to get back to also, the gameplay.
Before we round out, I don't like the way that it looks. I think the Na'vi in Pandora looks too cartoonish. They should have tried to made it more textured and more real, like it, like make it look like Pandora, but don't make it just look like somebody's CG'd a world and just painted it really colourfully. Just that's what it's lacking for me. I don't really like underwater films either.
Yeah, it's the underwater film, underwater level of a game, pretty much. That's what this film is.
And
I think maybe I need to watch it at a better quality. Maybe that's what possibly. It was, but I don't know. That make it look that much worse. Some parts
we probably
kind of
shouldn't be saying
graphics.
This on the podcast, just so you know.
Oh, sorry.
we should be watching it at better quality, like 1080p instead of 440.
I don't know what mine was.
Anyway,
it said SD.
It is what it is. My final note is the mocap or them trying to capture the real people as Na'vi. Why does it only, like, I don't know what the young kids look like, sorry, but, like, so Cliff Curtis plays the head of the Metcaina tribe and Jake Sully, played by Sam Worthington, they look facially like the actors that play them.
Yeah.
Go and tell me, did you know Kate Winslet was playing Ronal, the wife?
Nope.
No.
It does look like her,
it
actually.
It doesn't, really.
She's got her eyes.
Not as much as Jake Sully looks like Sam Worthington.
Jake Sully, yeah.
Or, the head of the Metcaina looks like Cliff Curtis. That kind of threw me. Because Zoe Saladina, whatever, what's her name, Saladana, who plays Jake Sully's partner, doesn't really look like her either. I don't know.
Some look like it, some
off,
don't.
Yeah, it's kind of off a wee bit. Anyway.
Jake Sully just looks a lot like him.
Anyway, that's our thoughts on Avatar. Sorry, Jim, if you're listening. It's made absolute coin, like, loads of money. It's the fifth or sixth highest grossing film of all time now. And a time where we never thought you'd get a film break $2 billion ever again. Mm. All it takes is Big Jim to come back with an Avatar film. Luckily, but
Jim, make True Lies 2.
I wanted me to do a Terminator sequel. Like, go back to the films that I love. Anyway.
And then use your new technology in that film.
Also, the ending of this film is horrific.
It's shit.
It's like,
you're now water.
Exactly,
people.
We're now water. Like, your son is with our, like, spirit people. And
seaweed.
And you can't run. You are now Metcaina. And it's like Jake Sully looking at the camera going, we are water people. We will fight. So basically, the next two films are just going to be the Metcaina tribe fighting the Sky Folk.
And they've just, like, left. Wasn't our whole promise to her dad that she was going to protect the fucking forest people?
Yeah.
Nah, who gives a fuck about them anymore?
We'll see how the Avatar 2 and 3 and 4 go down. I'm not looking forward to them. But anyway.
Neither am I, but I'll watch them.
James, give me another Terminator. Give me another Aliens. Give me another True Lies, or, like, you know.
Bring back Arnie and just make a new action film.
Or, like, give me Titanic, man. Do you know what I mean?
Titanic 2.
Titanic over Avatar every day.
Like, this, I'd like to make him see him do something like a kind of a new thriller. That'd be kind of funny.
Aye. Do a superhero movie.
I mean, I think he'd do a good job of that.
Look, I don't think we're in a position to give James Cameron job advice.
We're speaking like we're like better. I don't know.
Career advice for James Cameron: don't listen to two random cunts on the internet talking about you, because he's currently got three of the top six highest gross movies of all time. He's made a lot of money. I think he knows what he's doing, and he's more worried about developing tech than he is writing a good story, though, and that really pisses me off.
He
might not be the head writer on these stories. I'm guessing he is, but I mean, I'm guessing there'll be multiple people at the writing table, unless it is just him. I think he's lost that in the sight of developing all this technology and these kind of world-building films where he's got so... I think what's happened is he's got so engrossed in Pandora and Avatar films, and he has been for years. Like, he wanted to make this in the early 90s, but couldn't because the technology didn't exist. And it went through multiple rewrites, and it was only meant to be, like, three films, but then he had to split, like, one into two films because there was more in it. I don't really know why you had to do that, Jim. But I feel like what he maybe should have done is wrote an overview for three movies and then handed it to a really good scriptwriter and went, can you make a really good narrative out of that? And then I'll deal with all the cool shit and the technology and the way it looks. Because I genuinely feel as though if the narrative and the stories in these films were like 4 out of 5, 5 out of 5, these films would be way more critically well acclaimed. They obviously are, but I think the audience would maybe like them a lot more as well.
Yeah, like I just feel like a lot of things he wrote better in the film. Like, see, like, well, this is a spoiler, but a family member dies in the film. I feel like the way they react to it, the way it's written, is awful.
Yeah, and then it
seems like they don't even care.
Yeah, it felt like that. Anyway, this podcast is becoming a lot longer than I thought it would be, so let's wrap it up. Let us pick a winner of Best Picture. This is the crown jewel of the Oscars. We maybe should have done this episode second, but we've got more films to watch because there's fuck tons of movies to watch. But anyway, where are you going for Best Picture at the Oscars?
Best Picture. I think that everything could have won this one, to be honest. I think it will. Yeah. I'm feeling like it's gonna win. If it's gonna win one of these ones, it's gonna win this one, I feel like. And there's another one that will definitely, I think it should, or it should win anyway, but we'll see if that actually does
happen. Yeah, we will see.
Yeah, I'm gonna see.
This is the, well, Everything Everywhere All At Once is the most nominated. I think it's got 11 nominations, so.
Yeah.
Obviously, we should preface that we're only doing the kind of big categories. We're not doing below the line, like we're not doing like costume and editing and sound and all that stuff. It could win those, but we're focusing on the sort of bigger awards. So you think Everything Everywhere All At Once for this one?
I think it will win this one, yeah.
I think, well, do you know what, I think if everybody in the world or if the general population got a vote, Top Gun Maverick would win this. I feel as though it's the film that most people had the most fun with, so they would probably go, it's the best. I don't think it'll win this. As much as I wouldn't mind a film like this winning Best Picture, because it's about time that mainstream media should win an award like this, because not the Academy doesn't necessarily always coalesce with what makes the most money. And I'm quite happy to see Avatar and Top Gun on this list, because they are big, massive blockbuster films. But I think it's a three-headed monster. It's between Banshees of Inisherin, Everything Everywhere All At Once, and Tar.
Tar's not winning.
Well, I said Todd Field for Best Director, so I'm going to put Banshees of Inisherin winning Best Picture. So, yeah, it is Banshees for me, Everything Everywhere All At Once for Kenzie. And to be honest with you, do you know what would fuck everybody up and blow everybody's mind if All Quiet on the Western Front just won this as well?
Imagine if Avatar won. Avatar, oh my god! I'm actually gonna,
he never got a Best Director nom, which is kind of weird. Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, the list for Best Picture's 10, but everything else is 5. It's a bit of a weird one. You can't have everybody in every category. The thing about All Quiet on the Western Front, I think it's a definite shoo-in to win Best International Feature. So I don't think it'll win Best Picture. Obviously, it won the BAFTAs, but I think it's definitely going to win International Feature. So, yeah, just a rundown before we quickly wrap up the podcast. For Best Adapted Screenplay, me and Kenzie both agree that All Quiet on the Western Front will win, or it's our prediction of what will win. We are split in original screenplay. I have... Did I say Banshees for this? I think I did, didn't I?
Yeah, she did.
Said Banshees for this. You said Everything Everywhere All At Once. We move up to Best Director. I had Todd Field for Tar. You had the two Daniels for Everything Ever All at Once.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Or did you have Martin McDonagh for Banshees of Inisherin?
I had Martin McDonagh. I had Martin McDonagh.
So I had Todd Field. Kenji had Martin McDonagh. And finally, for Best Picture, it's not flipped. I have the Banshees of Inisherin winning Best Picture, and you have Everything Everywhere All at Once winning Best Picture. So yeah, that is it for part one of our Oscars prediction. We hope you enjoyed listening to us. This is a more current movie podcast than we've ever done, which is a bit of a different one.
We're keeping up with the kids.
We're keeping up with the times now. That might not last much longer, but it might bring in another audience to the podcast, and they might go and start listening to what we've already produced. So yeah, as always, if you'd like to check us out, you can find us over on Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon Music, and all of that good stuff. Just search Cult Film Cafe. If you'd like to go over and give us a follow over on the Instagram and the Twitter, we are at Cult Film Cafe. You can also find us on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/Cult Film Cafe. We are basically Cult Film Cafe everywhere. And if you can't find us, just give us a wee Google search. We will pop up. We have a YouTube channel where we put stuff up. If you don't have a streaming service, you can still listen to our podcast. So yeah, it's been a blast as always. And it was quite interesting doing new films for once, as much as not a deep dive, but we got to talk about the films that are current with the Oscars just around the corner. And we hope you tune in for part two, where we will talk about the acting categories and a wee special one animated feature. So yeah, it's a goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
Podcast out.